So what's the Italian for just do what you did last year, damn it? Welcome to our Le Mans 2024 preview on Motorsport 101.
Yes, the time of year where I get the reins. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Le Mans preview. It is that time of the year. It's humid. It's hot out, and we motorsport fans are getting prepared for the absolute demolition of sleep schedules, the calling out of work, which sadly, you know, can't really do anymore. Sinus infections and all that. It's me. It's Cameron Buckley. It's him. It's Andre Harrison.
Hi, everybody. It's kind of weird playing second fiddle on my own show. This doesn't happen very often, given I like to think I'm quite versatile on motorsport, but this is the one time of year I let Cameron Buckley cook. You don't normally get a white guy in charge of the barbecue, but here we are. He's earned special privileges in this instance.
Look, I know how to make a good brisket. Calm down.
As you do. Welcome to our 2024... Le Mans preview, the 92nd run-in of the famous race at the Circuit de la Sarthe, the 24 hours of Le Mans, 62 entrants representing 14 different manufacturers heading down for the ultimate test of stamina, perseverance, reliability, and raw outright speed. It's a magical race. The best race in the world, in my opinion, and this is.
Oh my God, he's coming around!
Shut up! And this is the biggest edition of Le Mans, maybe ever. I mean, shoot somebody for saying this is the golden era of sports car racing, but it really does feel like it right now. And we have unprecedented depth to talk about here at the moment. We are talking. What was it, 23 hypercars in the top class this year?
It's just a ridiculous top class. I mean, we haven't had a top class on this level, honestly, ever. In terms of manufacturer involvement, certainly not since the end of the 90s and the Group C era. And what a far cry it is from the couple of years ago when really the ACO were inviting cars just to have a top class, grandfathering in. Cars built under previous regulations. And now, whether you pick LMH for your formula or LMDH or GTP for your formula, we now have just an overloaded top class. It's actually begun to kind of dig into, it's begun to eat LMP2. And not just in terms of the size of the class, but the depth of the drivers that these teams have been able to acquire, the quality of the teams involved, some of the very best, not only from the last couple of years in the top class, but some of the very best from the GT world and LMP2 have now got their programs up and running, and they are here. And there's still more to come. We'll get Aston Martin here next year.
Oh, yeah. If the field stays as is, that would be the 10th different manufacturer in the hypercar class alone, which is just absolutely unprecedented. I remember back in the days when Cam was begging for us to do sports cars on this show, while at the same time screaming at the ACO about how incompetently sports cars was being run and shrinking
the NMP1 class. Honestly.
And just talking about how the dying embers of NMP1 as we knew it was fading away rapidly, and you'd wanted the world to know just how angry you were at the state of sports car racing. And now look at it. A 62 entrant Le Mans, Cam. 62.
Yeah. Look, the organizers of this race and the writers of these regulations had to eat a lot of crow over the last couple of years. They didn't have a choice. It was adapt and work together, shake hands on both sides of the Atlantic between, obviously, IMSA and the WEC, and then the ACO in the middle to really cultivate a working set of regulations that can work on both sides of the Atlantic. We haven't really seen much of that in terms of LMH over here in the U.S., but we have seen a lot of the GTPs go over to Europe and see success there. And that has culminated in this massive top class, which will really be the focus of this podcast. We'll touch a little bit on LMP2, both the pro and the pro-am categories, as well as the new for this year, LMGT3. GTE is gone. May it rest. It gave us some phenomenal battles over the years. I still think the 911 RSR is the best sounding race car on earth. Long may it rest. But we now have a healthy GT grid with established GT3 cars, a couple established GT3 teams coming over to compete over here with Toes cars for the first time, including some guy who used to race in yellow on a motorcycle. Heard he's quite popular in France.
Getting mobbed at autograph sessions, levels of popular.
Tackle. The French, they love their bikes. And you may notice that the other side of the sports car-centric contingent is not here. Well, our friend and yours, RJ O'Connell, is actually on location for Daily Sports Car working this weekend at Le Mans.
Indeed, but he has also chipped in a lot of his thoughts via text, and he'll also send in his predictions towards the end of the show as well. So we'll fill those in and give him his thoughts from Le Mans itself as we get down to recording this show for the next hour or so. Also, what's up, Cam?
Unfortunately, one of your Hyperpole contenders has just been written off in night practice.
What?
The 12 Porsche is completely destroyed.
I've just tuned into our Discord server on night practice to see what's going on, and
looks like Callum Ilott's okay. Well,
thank goodness.
There goes my best privateer prediction.
Yeah, that's a write-off. Holy shit! Yeah, that's that is a wreckage. Goddamn. More on that later. But, yeah, not good on that one. But we'll have to get to that as we get to Porsche later on in the show. So, as mentioned from earlier, a little bit of a talk on the BOP situation, and then we'll get into all our main hypercar brands and contenders. And, of course, we'll talk about LMP2 and LMGT3 towards the end of the show as well. We'll do the places you can find us at the end of the show. But until then, let's get into our Le Mans 24 Hours preview.
Now, to preview this just a tad for those who may not be regular sports car watchers, we're going to go down the list in terms of top class category manufacturers from their fastest times from pre-event testing. We have a full-blown test day at Le Mans before the official proceedings occur. All of these cars run on Michelin rubber. All of these cars have hybrid powertrains, Toyota, Ferrari, Peugeot, and they run with front axle hybrids. All of the LMDH cars have rear axle hybrids. Now for this year, that horrible little segment that we always got to talk about, balance of performance. And it's actually pretty interesting this year. There's been no massive swings like there were last year that I have to complain about for months on end. Rather, a few tweaks here and there, but the introduction of a new two-stage system where some cars lose or gain power above 250 kilometers per hour, whatever a kilometer is. So you're basically using that to control the speeds of the cars. Some cars have remained static, like the Porsche. Some lose a little bit of power above 250, like the Ferrari. Some of them gain a little bit, like the Peugeot and a couple of others.
Yeah, so the BMW, the Isottas, Alpines, and Toyota all gain about 1% or just under 1% of their power above 250 clicks. So they're the big winners of this new power gain feature.
Yeah, and so it's another tool. I really don't love the fact that it's being introduced for Le Mans when we've had effectively two races to do a dress rehearsal for it if they were going to bring it in. But we're just going to have to wait and see what effect that has. we'll see come race day.
We will indeed. I mean, what's your overall impression of the BOP going into this race? Because the overall impression, I guess, that Peugeot got the biggest performance break. They needed it, to be fair, because the 9X8 has just not been at the races outside of Qatar, where they were set to get a podium finish, but then their car died on the final lap, effectively. Besides that, I mean, Peugeot's gotten the biggest break. Ferrari's top speed has been nerfed compared to just about everybody else. I mean, minus 1.7 on the power gate is about, I worked the math, it's about 11 horsepower, which is genuinely significant.
There is no greater power track on this earth than Circuit de la Sarthe. If you are lacking horsepower, you've got nowhere to hide, especially if it's regulated that you lose a little bit. So we're going to have to see thus far, and there's always going to be an element of keeping your cards close to your chest. The BOP games have started with discussions from Toyota mentioning how others are favorites, Porsche backing away from the favorites claim, the discussion about the power gain system. So far, we're currently in night practice. We've had the first qualifying session. Pretty good mix at the top of the field. It looks like they've got this relatively close.
Seeing qualifying and seeing the practice runs so far, we're recording this on Wednesday night, and seeing the first day of practice and qualifying, I think they've got it pretty close. I mean, we got 7 different manufacturers into the top 8 spots of Hyperpole. Well, 6 now,
should have been more.
Yeah, it should have been 7, but unfortunately the number 7 Toyota driven by Coach K, Kamui Kobayashi, was yanked out of the running after causing a red flag on his final lap of qualifying, and lost all of his times. So they were safely in the top 8. They've been yanked out because they've lost all their times, and that put the number 12 Team Jota Porsche.
The car that was Canada until about 5 minutes ago, a Porsche.
Yeah, now it's a
scrap.
Which is not ideal. We still have 6 different manufacturers in the top 8 for Hyperpole qualifying tomorrow as we record this. So I think they've seemingly got it in a pretty good place right now. I mean, we had Alpine in the top 5. We've had only 2 of the 6 fleets of Porsches make Hyperpole. It's a bit all over the place right now. I mean, Seb Bourdais was up there. BMW was right up there as well. So
BMW went fastest.
Only I think 1%, less than 1% covered the field, which is great. That's where you want it to be. A lot of people reckon one brand is on top, and we'll get to that later, but it looks to me as if the field is pretty damn close right now on outright speed, which is where you want it to be right now.
Exactly. And they've done it without having to make the huge swings they did last year, because last year Toyota were prohibitive favorites going in, and rightly or wrongly, they took a whack at them. This year, it's been a lot more nip and tuck, which you expect in the second year of the proper second year of a set of regulations. And so far, I like what I see. What I will preface that with is that we are still about 2 seconds a lap away from last year's pole time. There is still a lot of lap time to be found, especially when, I mean, generally, session to session, this year has been about 6/10 faster than last year, just on understanding and development on these cars. So I think they've got it in a pretty good place.
I think so too. Shall we try and break down? We'll get to this when we inevitably review this race, because just to see how well the BOP actually fared. But shall we break down the runners and riders, Cam?
Absolutely.
Yeah, let's get into Isotta Franceschini first. The minnows of the field, shall we say. It's an interesting setup. Just the one car, the number 11, team of Jean-Carl Vernet from France, 2013 GTE AM winner. Antonio Serravalli, from Canada, rookie from Indy Next and IMSA LMP3. Oh no, it's the dentist class. Run for your life. and Carl Bennett, the Thai American rookie from Asian Le Mans Series LMP2. And I'll read RJ's notes as best I can as he leaves them here on my sheet of paper. And it says here, quote, "No matter the difference in pace between the top-of-the-line hypercars and themselves, or themselves to the LMP2 frontrunners, the goal for Isotta and the Duque N team is to simply finish the race, which seems like a very easy goal on the surface. But for a boutique team with two rookies taken on because of the commercial realities of the sport, you'd be surprised how tough that bar is to clear. Bicols, in its many iterations, hadn't done that in over 15 years. Perhaps a stronger benchmark should be Glickenhaus last year. Despite problems, they persevered to finish 6th and 7th overall. But that might be too much to ask for this first-year team."
Yeah, I mean, I can only really echo what RJ wrote there because, I mean, Duquesne are a fairly competent team. They built a reasonably solid LMP3, and this car has actually been developed by the same crew as well, who used to do the Ferrari GT cars. But ripping the bandage off, this is the minnow. This is the one self-constructed privateer amidst a sea of privateers with cars bought in, mostly from Porsche, or the manufacturers in their various states of experience and development. I think the biggest concern about this team is really how raw their driver lineup is, because thus far the car has shown flashes of pretty decent pace in between the occasional reliability issue inherent to a brand new car. But there is a gulf between their driver talent and the driver talent of pretty much every other car in the field, where this is an exceptionally deep field this year, even with the more privateer run cars. This team is a pair of rookies and someone who last won around here in 2013 in the AM category. I think if they can simply run a clean race and finish, that is a tremendous achievement on the part of this team. Because thus far, reliability hasn't been great. The driver decision-making out on track has not been great. And in FP1, they barely outpaced the LMP2s.
Not ideal.
It is what it is. But I do want to see them. I want to see them run a clean race. I want to see them finish. Because there's a lot of very... very hardworking people kind of in all components of this team who are really just trying to get this off the ground and then see where they are.
Indeed. They will likely be the minnows of the field, and you know, you can't help but root for them sometimes. Let's hope they can get a clean race under their belts and just get it home. And that will be a great achievement for them. The next team, we talked behind the scenes a little bit about them, and we genuinely aren't sure where to place them, and it's the Alpine team. It's the Alpine Endurance team. We all know they got the V6, the Mecha Chrome engine, which has been the butt of many jokes since we got here. The number 35, Paul-Luc Chatin, Ferdinand Habsburg. We all know
he's back in that car.
Yeah, first race back in that car. Yeah, 2021 LMP2 winner here, returning from injury, and Charles Millesi as well, also winner in the LMP2 category in 2021. And then the 36 car, Nicolas Lapierre, as we like to call him on this show, the sicko.
four-time... Any idea how shockingly little that narrows it down?
Oh, yeah. Four-time LMP2 winner, of course, alongside Mathieu Vosvier, as well as Mick Schumacher making his Le Mans debut, the former Haas F1 driver. You know him, you love him, and I know he's got a lot of people rooting for him in that number 36 camp, given a lot of people feel like he was hard done by in F1. I love that you've put here, Cam, quote, "Well, it can only go better than the F1 team has been."
the bar is metaphysically low. Transcendently low. Well, let's just look at the ingredients with this Alpine team. You have an Orica chassis, Orica, who have completely consumed LMP2 in this modern era. And that chassis has been doing work over in the U.S. as the underpinnings of the sadly absent Acura ARX06. One of these days, they really got to bring that thing over here, because that thing's a missile in a straight line. You have the Signatec team, who has been a staple of this prototype category, both, you know, at the top with the grandfathered Rebellion from a couple of years ago, but also as a powerhouse LMP2 team. And you have the Mechachrome V6. Not a good sign when today one of the first cars that stopped was one of the Alpines with a throttle issue, and that car sounded like it was a broken washing machine on its last spin cycle.
Yeah, that was not ideal at all. That they were having early technical gremlins, but the car's not slow. Shutdown made Hyperpole, top five in qualifying today for the Alpine squad, so they're not slow by any stretch of the imagination, so it looks like they might have something here. I think with them, the big question mark is going to be reliability. We've seen Alpines parked on the side of roads multiple times already this season, and we joke about them, but that Mechachrome is always going to be like guilty until proven innocent.
Especially when, and now this engine is not the exact same as the F2 motor. It is fairly heavily redeveloped on the inside. It's not hooked up to a clutch, which is built from toothpicks and chewing gum. But the, let's say, the cousin of this engine, of the same bloodline, was hot garbage when it was in the privateer LMP1s a few years ago. Mm. So we're going to need to see how it lasts through the race. I do think they have speed in the car. I think they've got one of the best teams operationally on the whole grid. I'm really curious to see how Mick gets on in this, because he's not really done anything in terms of prototype racing up to this point, besides the races that obviously he's done in WEC. But Le Mans is really its own event entirely. The rest of this lineup, you've got LMP experience in spades. I mean, LaPierre, four-time winner. Mathieu Vaxivier, don't tell Mr. Risi, but he's turned into a pretty solid driver in the last couple of years. But it's also a brand new car on with very first year, first run for this engine in this form. I think they've got speed to do something with it, but reliability is going to be the big question mark. They need to run a clean race first.
Yes. Next on the list, we have Cadillac, who are still looking for their first Le Mans win as the race entity they are today. The Dallara chassis, the 5.5-litre naturally aspirated V8, they are split into the Action Express racing team, the 311 in that lineup. Pipo Derani, you know him. I wouldn't say you love him, but Pipo Derani is there. You all know what to expect with him. Jack Aitken returns. Hopefully his Le Mans lasts more than 25 seconds this time round. And not Tom Blomqvist, because we all know what happened with him in IndyCar. Let's just say he was told to kick rocks right before he could actually make it back to France in time. And instead, his seat is now going to 2022 Formula 2 champion Felipe Drugovich, making his Le Mans debut from Aston Martin's F1 feeder system. And I use the term feeder system in inverted commas. But also
Preseason testing,
as you said. And also the other two cars are the usual two from Chip Ganassi Racing. Their last year running the Cadillacs as we know it. The number two car in blue, Earl Bamber, two-time Le Mans winner in 2015 and 2017. Alex Lynn, who's won this race with GTE Pro in 2020. And making his Le Mans debut, the best IndyCar racer in the world right now, Alex Palou, makes his Le Mans debut after very much impressing at Daytona over in IMSA earlier this year. Also in the number three car, how's this for a lineup? Sebastian Bourdais, 2016 GTE Pro
hometown
winner.
Hometown kid.
Hometown hero, Peugeot veteran, four-time champ car winner, one of the best racers of this generation, Seb Bourdais, Renger van der Zander, whose name sounds like the Bowser's theme music, and some guy called Scott Dixon, this generation's greatest IndyCar racer. That's the number three team. Well, Cam, take it away. You know what to expect with Cadillac here, right?
I expect to know. I have no idea what a kilometer is. perhaps the best sounding racing car on earth. Cadillac returns to Le Mans after a good but tumultuous race last year, let's call it. Spins, crashes, fires, and they got out of Dodge with a podium.
Somehow.
Despite that car beginning to burn oil by the end of the race. So again, about everything that could go wrong did, and they came out of it looking pretty good. But so often this year, Cadillac have been the bridesmaids. Second after the race-long war between themselves and Porsche Penske Motorsport with the Action Express car at Daytona. Second, despite a dominant display at Sebring, losing the lead in the dying embers of the 12 hours.
What was he doing? Cooking.
cooking with gas. And on the other side of the hypercar equation over in WEC, it's not great, Jim.
No.
Disqualified from Qatar. Messi in Imola, despite showing some speed. And then, the car was put through a paper shredder at Spa.
Thanks, Bamba. It's worth pointing out that the number two car will have a five-place grid penalty no matter what happens in qualifying because of Earl Bamber's huge wreck that wouldn't look out of place in a burnout game during the 6 hours of Spa last month.
Yes, the grinding takedown.
Mm-hmm.
Look, Chip Ganassi Racing are on their way out of this program. They have assembled an almighty driver lineup to uphold their reputation. Alex Palou is your plus one, man.
Alex Palou.
What? That is unbelievable quality.
One of the best pound-for-pound racers in the world right now, period.
And phenomenal at Daytona. I mean, he looked like he was doing prototype racing for years, and that's the highest compliment that I can give. Who else can say you've got Alex Palou as your plus one? And Scott Dixon is the plus one in the other car. Heard he's pretty good. Now, the adage goes, to finish first you have to finish. Last year seemed to be the only race here at Le Mans where the Cadillacs could finish. Because if that car has yellow paint on it, it has been marked for death. Their biggest enemy here really is themselves. They need to cut out the mistakes that have caused, again, disqualifications and crashes galore during their runs this year. Not great reliability as well over in Daytona, where the yellow caddy, the 01, succumbed to a catastrophic electrical failure that put them out of the race. And to Action Express, well, it can only go better than last year, Jack. If their Le Mans lasts more than 25 seconds at the sharp end of the field, they're going to take that as a win.
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt. Jack Aitken is a very capable racing driver when he wants to be. Last year was not it, Chief.
There's one race in the world that you can't win it on lap one. It's a 24-hour race.
Somewhere, Helio Castroneves just pulled out his magnificent hair and said 24 hours ringing in Jack Aitken's ears for the last 12 months. 24 hours. Look, I know that Cadillac is a strong team that have excellent drivers, proven quality, and outright speed when it wants to. It needs to be reliable. It needs to dodge trouble. If it can do that, it will always have a shot. No question. They've got more than enough quality in all three of their cars to make that work. I'll be very curious to see how Felipe Drugovich gets on, because Tom Blomqvist, no matter which way you slice it, is being missing is a blow for that Action Express team. He was magnificent at Daytona, probably the best outright driver, arguably, in that entire race. him missing out on Le Mans is big. And bless him, he committed to IndyCar and gave it his best. The timing just didn't work on him on this one. I'm very curious to see how Felipe Drugovic will get on. We know Pipo Durrani will do the heavy lifting. He's like, when he's not being a sicko, he's a very, very, very fast driver.
He might be. Look, he might have the most raw speed in any prototype here. The problem is that that speed is raw, and sometimes he will drive through you or through himself. They got to keep it clean. I mean, last year was so unfortunate for Action Express because, again, their race lasted a sector. When they had lap time, they had speed to do something with it. If a Cadillac gets a clean run, I almost nail on a top five result. If they get a really clean run and some of the pace that they've shown today is anything to go by, they could very well be in the fight for the podiums or more if they can keep it clean.
Yes, very much so. Next up, three-time winners, Peugeot. This might not be pretty. The Peugeot 9X8, now with spoiler, now with 100% more Wang for your viewing pleasure.
Can I put a Wang on this?
Yes. Yeah, you can. Now we've added rear spoiler. Two cars again this year. None in the 93 car, Mikael Jensen, a future Porsche Formula E driver, Nico Müller, and Jev, your favorite supermarket scanner himself, John Eric Verne. In the 94 car, former F1 racer and LMP2 winner in 2020, Paul de Resta, alongside Loic de Waal, who won this race back in 2013, and Stoffel season, baby. The waffle himself, Stoffel van Dorn, in the 94 team. Again, driver quality very much there. But this car's been given the biggest BOP break for a reason, Cam.
Yeah. Forget everything you know from last year, because Peugeot are same, but different. Last year, the surprise of the race perhaps undoubtedly was the little wingless car that was a peaky mess all season coming alive in the mixed conditions and rocketing out ahead of the field. Because last year, by running no wing and running equal width tires all the way around, different tire stagger compared to what they have now, they could run their all-wheel drive system, so they have the front axle hybrid, at a much lower speed compared to everyone else, 120 kph rather than 190. And it worked. Scrub all of that. This car is now much more traditional. It has a rear wing. It has smaller front tires compared to rear. And it has not been great thus far, Chief.
No.
It's less peaky, so they say. Compared to the previous car, where it would either be exceptional or awful. And it has brought them a car that in testing has performed very well. But up to this point, you could probably put it a little bit down to an unkind BOP table while the FIA assess this new beast. But there's just not been a lot here.
It hasn't. I mean, there was some hope in Qatar because they had that 94. That was the old car. And now with, like, it's kind of funny. They dumped the old car just as it was showing some genuine promise. And now this new car seems to have taken them back in towards the midfield again. It's wild. And don't get me wrong, I can understand why the BOP has been harsh, maybe to a degree, because you're probably better off playing it safe when a brand new car rolls up when it comes to assessing. You don't want to let the brand new car, if it is good, rip the field's throat out. But at the same time, you know, it doesn't help a situation like this when Peugeot are just trying to get off the ground again with this brand new car, and it just doesn't look fast.
No, it certainly looks fast. It's one of the best looking cars, I think, on the grid.
It's a beautiful car.
Gorgeous looking thing.
Bring back the rainbow livery, you cowards.
Oh, it was so good last year.
It was so good.
And I think driver lineup-wise, I think they're as good as anyone here. Mm-hmm. I think the bigger concern for them is really the fact that they still have not had really clean reliability in the longer distance races. They had the fuel, obviously the fuel problem in Qatar. But last year, that great run was then put to an end by just a series of little mechanical ailments that derailed what looked like a potential, a podium run at the end of last year's Le Mans. It just all fell apart near the end. If they've got something in the tank, they really need to show it, because Peugeot has a history in prototypes. The first version, not always that great. The second version, destroyer of worlds, destroyer of entire categories back in the 90s. And I do think we know that they are committed through, I believe through 26 is when their program is committed through, but they really got to start showing results now.
Now's as good a time as any. Let's talk about the brand new big sexy manufacturer making its debut here at the 24 Hours of Le Mans. It's the Lamborghini Iron Lynx team with their new SC63 hypercar. It's a beautiful 3.8-liter twin-turbo V8 chassis built by Ligier. Two cars. In the number 19, we have Matteo Caroli from Italy. We got IndyCar and former F1 man Romain Grosjean and Andrea Caldarelli as well. In the 63, we got Mirko Bortolotti. We got Formula E's title contender of years old, Edo Mortara, one of their most venerable veterans they've had in recent years. And Daniil Kvyat. I love that RJ put parts unknown in brackets for Daniil Kvyat in terms of where he's
fantastic.
From.
Fantastic.
Great work there, RJ, if I do say so myself. But Cam, what have you made of Lamborghini? I know they're very embryonic as a team right now. I've only seen them even race in general just a handful of times in IMSA and obviously over here in WEC. But what have you made of Lamborghini so far as a brand new team, and what sort of expectations have you got for them going in?
I don't know.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah. I mean, really, I didn't actually really know what to write for Lamborghini, because that car looks the business. That is one of the most gorgeous looking prototypes I have ever seen in my life.
It's a Lambo. It was always going to look pretty, wasn't it?
Like, damn it, it's good. And you could do a whole lot worse than that driver lineup. That is elite from top to bottom. I mean, Mirko Bortolotti, machine. A machine born to drive Volkswagen Group mid-engine sports cars. Eduardo Mortara, no introduction needed. Daniil Kvyat, still very good. Romain Grosjean's probably your floor guy, and he is, if nothing else, fast.
Yes.
But let's call Lamborghini what they are right now. As you said, this is very much an embryonic car right now. It's a test session. It has had all the shakedown issues of a brand new race car. It isn't helped by the fact that this is a truly new chassis as well. For those who don't know, the GTP cars are built on the backbone of four existing tubs, four bought-in tubs, and then you build the car around it. This is the only one thus far built on the Ligier chassis. So it's a brand-new chassis. It's a brand-new engine. A team that hasn't run here before with the prototypes. And it's a 24-hour race. Now, usually that doesn't mix, but it worked great for Ferrari last year, so maybe they see what they are. Good luck, have fun, and they have to hope they make the flag with both cars intact. I think just finishing is a win for them with the program in the situation it is right now. They're very raw. This is uncharted, going to be a baptism of fire.
Yeah, this is uncharted waters for them, isn't it? Like, this is their first 24-hour race, I believe, of any kind. So,
Run Daytona. It was too late. They ran the test, but they did not run the race. And Sebring, well, the car
didn't
was
go
just back in laps.
Yeah, it was just there to make up the numbers. It was a glorified shakedown, literally, in many cases. And, this is a very embryonic team, very embryonic car. just get it home and see. Basically, use this as a learning experience. So you'll learn more about your car in the next week than you will have had for the previous 2 years when you were developing this thing. Le Mans will bring up and will bring up tests that you will never even think about when it comes to your cars in here. So just run it and see what happens. Basically,
great racing cars. Audi proved this a long time ago with the R8, which, as we know, became a car that brought the world to heel for about 5 years. Great racing cars can't just test. They need to be raced. There are things in race conditions that you just can't simulate. If they get out of this clean, even if they just get the cars to the finish, I'm expecting reliability issues for them. That is a win. And then your program begins to pick up steam and you begin to not just, you know, fight to survive, but actually begin to become competitive. I think that's the expectation around Lamborghini. Any position they get in class, I think, is a bonus for them.
I think that's a fair assumption as well. Next up, BMW. The BMW M team, WRT, you know them. They're very experienced veterans of sports car racing and management. You'd think the BMW brand is in good hands with WRT helping to run them. Two strong cars, two strong teams again. The number 15, one of the fastest dudes in qualifying already. Dries Van Tor was the one who guided them there in the number 15 car. He won the GTM class here in 2017 alongside their new boy, the Hammer, the Raffaele Marcello. It's his first Le Mans.
As if we call him new. A monster in the sports car world.
Yeah, a sports car demon from Switzerland. But this is his first time running Le Mans in the big boy class for the first time. And Marco Wittmann alongside him as well. Again, first Le Mans for him as well. If you're a DTM fan, you'll certainly know of Marco Wittmann. And in the number 20 car, Sheldon van der Linde from South Africa. Again, another DTM veteran. DTM champion, I believe, as well. I think I'm right in saying. In the 20 car. Again, his first Le Mans in the big boy category alongside Formula E and LMP2 class winner Robin Freins and René Rast, who is just fucking fast in anything, really.
René Rast is René fast.
RJ's chipped in with some notes here saying, quote, "When I talked to Marcello van der Linde and Vincent Voss, the boss, today, the expectations were pretty tempered, but there's a feeling that they're close to a breakthrough, and Voss enjoys the challenge of building up a new program and representing BMW on this, the 25th anniversary of BMW's one and only overall win, the legendary V12 LMR back in 1999. I certainly wouldn't bet the mortgage on a BMW win. The field is too deep and a top 10 result might be a huge achievement for the state the program is in, but I'm curious to see how it does at Le Mans. I like the drivers they have, and WRT is a world-class organization. If they can't make this package work, I'm not sure who can." I'd love to know. I mean, BMW, again, are still behind the eight ball compared to some of the real big hitting rivals in hypercar. I know they're a year behind or so, Cam. But what do you make of RJ's comments about the state of the project at this point? Because it feels like it's been, I mean, I want to say teething problems, but I think it's more than that at this point, right?
Copy and paste a lot of what RJ said, and that's more or less what I would say about the program. They would be the first ones to tell you that they're not where they would be hoping to be at this point of the life cycle. This car has run in the past year in IMSA. Not been great, Chief, more often than not. Not great. There are the flashes, though. There are the flashes of something more. We saw one today. A BMW went fastest overall in qualifying. Not for pole, but they are in hyperpole, and that alone is an achievement. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there were cars that were about to knock that 15 BMW right off its perch, and then Coach K went off the track. I think if you were to pick a team to run to get this team out of the mud, there are no one else out there better than WRT. They arrived in LMP2 with vengeance. Immediately one of the best teams in the class, immediately competitive at Le Mans. And their driver lineup is as box office a lineup as you will see in any sports car race on the planet. That is all-star quality, top to bottom. But
this seems like a big but.
This BMW has not been reliable in the longer races. At Daytona this year, it just all fell apart, despite having pretty good pace at points of that race. In Sebring, again, issues just throughout the year. They've had issues on and off with glimpses of something more. The glimpses are of a race car that could very possibly win this race if they run it clean. They've got the drivers, they've got the team, but they're racing the clock first. They're racing the track first, and then you see where you are. Maybe it turns out well. I think that the expectation for BMW, if the supposed big 3 to 4, because I do think Cadillac is in the mix up at the very top, being the best of the rest behind them would be a phenomenal achievement, given top where 10. BMW get a top 10. If there will be cars that drop out of that. Yeah. I think the pace is going to be, you know, too pressing on these cars to not break something in some of these camps. Being the best of the rest would be a phenomenal achievement for WRT and BMW.
Yeah,
just and I think they are 10. Capable of it, but it's up to the car.
Going to be fascinating to watch them, because again, that is one of those lineups that is really recognizable. A lot of rookies, but a lot of guys who have proven their worth in other series to be incredibly fast.
Now, when you see Lamar rookie here, that does not speak to the embarrassment of riches that these guys have at pretty much every other endurance race of note.
I am not the biggest sports car guy, and even I know that lineup is filthy. Like, I've watched enough of other series to know Dries Van Tor is a monster, Rafael Marchiello is a monster, anybody with the surname Van der Linde is quick as hell, Robin Frijns is a fantastic Formula E driver and DTM racer, won here before in NMP2, and René Rast is René Rast. I don't need to add any more than that.
And not a Le Mans rookie. In fact, like, against the Porsche Armada in 2015, he was last man standing when his car broke in 2015, the 9 Audi. He was the last Audi really trying to hold back that tide, and the hybrid system let go. He acquitted himself damn well in the top class before. He will do it again.
No kidding. Let's get to the reigning champions and last year's winners, Ferrari. Their first Le Mans win in 60 years last year outright, and they're back to try and defend their title in the Ferrari 499P. Now we've added yellow. Three cars rolling up this time round as well. The AF Corsa private label, I say in inverted commas, number 83 of Bob Kubica. Yes, that Bob Kubica. Robert Schwartzman, again, I love from parts unknowable because he's got an Israeli driving license now. Was the Russian wonder. Is this double parts unknowable given he went from Russia to Israel?
Yes, it is.
Dear Lord. Again, you might know him from his days in Formula 2. He couldn't save a tire to save his life. But, fast as hell, though. Ferrari Driver Academy, F1 Reserve, has done a cup of coffee, testing in Formula E as well. Wouldn't be surprised if he ends up there next year. And Yiffy Yi, their big signing as well, to fill out the 83 car. Their main two cars, the 50 and 51, very familiar lineups if you know your sports car racing. Antonio Fuoco, number 7 on the Autosport's top 50 list last year. Cha-ching! Last year's pole sitter, arguably the fastest man in WEC on overall outright speed, alongside Miguel Molina and Nicholas Nielsen, who won this race in 2021 in the GTE AM category, and the number 51. Well, you know him. Last year's winners, it's an unchanged lineup: Alessandro Pierguidi, James Collado, and Antonio Giovinazzi. Cam, run it back.
That's the idea. Just do what you did last year. But of course, at Le Mans, it's never that simple. It's always a challenge. And this Ferrari team has been infected a little bit this year with a little bit of that Haas magic. Because they screwed Imola royally.
Yeah.
They had the field absolutely dead to rights in terms of speed. And they had the option, because of course AF Corsa runs the factory cars, and they run the completely private, not just a works car with an inverted livery, number 83. They chose to split none of their three strategies, and they all paid the price. At a race where, really, they had pace in hand. And then in Spa, really through no fault of their own, had pace, had speed, looked like they were on to win, and with a mix of a little Earl Bamber nonsense and a closer look at the rule book, just ended up on the wrong side of a race-defining decision from race control. And even then, come into this kind of on the back foot of the championship, which we'll talk about a little bit later when we get to our last manufacturer. We know the car is fast. If nothing else, the 499P is fast.
It's a rocket ship. It's the car that I've seen consistently at the front of the field most for outright speed.
I'd say one of two this year, and we'll get to them later. But when you've got that kind of speed and you've got the driver lineup they've got, and AF Corsa are better than what they've shown this year, you've got the ingredients to fight for that win. I think the issues for Ferrari are going to be coming outside the house. The power gain system has hit their car the hardest because their car is the fastest above a certain speed. This, they've still gotten a weight break compared to those around them, so it's not all bad on the BOP table, but it's not been, you know, what it was last year after that change before the race where, I mean, speed-wise, they were just swinging hammers all week and throughout the 24. It's not been that.
No.
And I think they've got a lot more competition this year. And last year was not clean, of course. Two big electrical issues. One cost them the lead. The second one almost cost them the race. Almost. So, for reliability, you got to shore that up. That's the only time we've seen this car run in 24 hours. Of course, it doesn't run over in America. And you've got to execute. This is what we talk about Ferrari all the time. They should have a win on the boards this year, and they failed to execute. In Imola, on home soil. We know they can. But will they?
Sums it up beautifully. They should
and
have
on the other side of things, just to talk about AF Corsa's plus one car. When your plus one car is Bobby Kay, Robert Kubica, Robert Schwartzman, and Yaya Faye, holy shit, that's a good lineup. Like, holy shit, that's a great lineup.
Yeah, it's a great lineup. Incredibly strong across the board. They've got nine excellent drivers. It's a fleet. They really should be winning this, or they at least should be
they're going to be in the fight.
Yeah, no question. Can they back it up, though? They're the first off of what we consider the three main contenders for this race, because here's the next one. It's Toyota, five-time winners of this race. Five times in the last 6 years they've won this overall race. The juggernaut overall package of Le Mans in recent times. Toyota Gazoo Racing in the GR10 hybrid. You know them. You've seen them. Now in dark mode for this year. And again, two very strong lineups, even though there's a line through one of them. In the number 7 car, originally was supposed to be 2021 winner of this race, Mike Conway, or as Conweezy to his friends. Unfortunately, he had a horrible cycling injury where he broke a collarbone and some ribs last week. Ironically, with the man who's now replacing him, and that's Jose Maria Lopez, who will fill in at the last minute in the number
Meet
7
the new
car.
Boss. Same as last year's boss.
Yes. Old teammate, fellow 2021 overall winner, Pachito, as they call him. He will be in the number 7 car alongside Coach K, Kamui Kobayashi, who was in that 7 car when they won it in 2021 as well. They're bringing back the old boys. And Nick DeVries, who, do not let the F1 run fool you. Nick DeVries is a very, very good sports car driver in that number 7 seat. And in the 8 seat, again, same team as last year. Four-time winner of this race, Sebastian Buemi, 2018, 19, 20, and 2022. Brendan Hartley, three-time winner of this race in 2017, 20, and 22. And Ryo Hirakawa, who won this race in 2021. Again, needs little introduction. They're Toyota. They will always have a shot here.
Yeah, car is in dark mode, and yet it's been kind of a dark mood over at Toyota. Mm. For all of the recent success at this event and in this series, they have cut a downtrodden figure pretty much all the way through the week. Now, plenty of that is political wrangling after they call a spade a spade. They lost the political game last year, and just close but no cigar. They will have felt very hard done by last year's race, despite their previous success. It ain't helped by the fact that there is no Toyotas in Hyperpole, because Coach K was on two purple sectors, spun it going out of karting, trying the Andre Lotterer line from years long past, spat him wide to lead at all times. And because it was right at the end of the lap, it also cost Brendan Hartley a chance to get the 8 into Hyperpole as well. Not exactly great. Yet, this is the temple of operational excellence and the most seasoned car here. They've received a weight break going into this race. And compared to last year, they are much more in line with everyone else's BOP. And they do have a win on the board here, thanks to that operational excellence powering them to the front in Imola, alongside some exceptional driving from that 7 crew. The loss of Conway is going to sting, because he has been dynamite here pretty much nonstop since he joined Toyota.
He's him.
He has been him here for a while. Kamui Kobayashi, you know what to expect. He's the overall lap record holder here. He is just mechanical in his speed and his consistency. A little bit messy in qualifying. You'd expect him to clean that up for the race. They're going to be going into this race with a chip on their shoulder. They will feel that they got robbed last year. They want revenge.
Yeah, Hirakawa's mistake in the stretch sealed off a race where they were already pretty mad that they felt really hurt by that last minute BOP change right before the race, and they were not happy about that going in, and they still nearly won it last year in spite of that. And this year they've not had a great season to write home about. Not really. They did win in Imola, like you said. Kamui was incredible holding off the very fast, I believe it was Kevin Estra. Kevin in the Porsche trying to chase him down in Imola, and Kamui held on as the clock ran out in that race. You know what to expect. Toyota are the kings of operational excellence in WEC. They are going to feature in this race by hook or by crook in some capacity. Although even Toyota admit they're not the favorites going into this one.
They're saying that.
You think they're playing this down, but they have pretty much openly said, and I quote, Porsche would do well to not win it from here. Which is kind of wild.
I'd love if they're correct.
I fucking bet you would.
But yeah, I do think Toyota will feature. I do think Toyota will lead. I think Toyota could win. But last year was a car practically overwhelmed by the BOP change. Their brakes are basically on the edge all race. This is the most seasoned car here. This car has been running since 2021 in one form or another. It has received its Joker updates, and it has been honed to a knife edge. This car is quality. Mm-hmm. You don't win Le Mans, you know, 2 years they have with this car without it being quality. But there is that, there is always that little sign hanging over Toyota. They gotta win this race with real competition. Whether you believe that or whether you are in that camp or not, the hashtag win a real ring crowd, you know they want to shut the haters up.
No kidding. And again, their main contenders across the aisle, Porsche Penske Motorsport and the Porsche fleet in general, 19-time winners of this race. They're going for number 20. And if you look, if you believe it from the factory end of things, the one big race that Roger Penske has never won as overall team boss.
Kind of the only one outside of Formula One.
Pretty much. This is the one that's been, this is the one that's always eluded him. And you'd argue this is the best chance he's likely ever had to finally take the big one. The Porsche 963. And as my colleague at Autosport, Gary Watkins, said, six bullets in the chamber for Porsche going into this race. With via three different teams, the Proton competition team in the number 99 with Neil Jarni, who won this race with Audi, I want to say, in 2016.
The won it at the death. He was in the car when the five Toyotas turbo let go. He crossed the line.
Indeed, yeah, number 99, Neil Jarni, alongside Harry Ticknell, who's won this race twice in NMP2 in 2014 and 2020 in GTE Pro, and Julian Andlauer, who won this race in 2018 in GTM, but also had that phenomenal race in the 6 hours of Spa last month. He was sensational in that race.
You know when we talk about F2 drivers and we say that boy nice? Julian Andlauer is my GT that boy nice. I have liked this kid since Porsche Cup. He is a monster in the making.
He basically renamed Eau Rouge at the 6 hours of Spa in the course of that race last month.
Him going through Eau Rouge and Radion was that base boosted centimeter.
Oh, yeah. Very fun indeed. Team Jota, I've got two cars, and that's going to be Will Stevens in the number 12. Well, yeah, one and a half. I'm sure they'll fix the number 12 in time.
Don't count out. That's not a tub, man. I hope that's not a tub on the 12.
Indeed. Because remember, you can't ever rule out Touchdown Tom. In the number 12 car, Will Stevens, who's won this race twice in 2017 in the GTE AM class and 2022's LMP2 category. Can a Mylot, representing all you screwed IndyCar fans out there who still hate Junkos Hollinger Racing, and Norman Nahto, Jake Dennis's dishwasher over in Andretti's Formula E team. So someone's got to wash Jake Dennis's dishes. In the number 38 car, you've got 2009 Formula One world champion Jenson Button alongside Philip Hansen, who won this race in the LMP2 class in 2020, and Oliver Rasmussen from Denmark. And I love that RJ put in brackets here. No relation to Christian. Not as ginger. Indeed. And of course, the Porsche factory team have three cars. In the number four, they've dusted off for this occasion. The Tandy Man Can, Nick Tandy, the 2015 winner with Porsche, Matthew Jaminet, who I think this is only his second ever Le Mans start in the big boy class, which is kind of weird.
Because he missed the cutoff. He was basically he was promoted to the front of the GT program right as the 919 program died.
Yeah,
never got a shot.
Weird how it turns out, but here he is in the number four car with Porsche and Felipe Nasr, who was incredible at Daytona earlier this year.
That final stint. Oh, my blood's boiling.
The final stint of the gods to win the 24 Hours of Daytona over at IMSA. In the number five car, Matt Campbell, who has been him in sports car racing this year across the board. The Aussie and 2018 GTM winner. Michael Christensen, 2018 GTE Pro winner. And Frederick Makowski from France, who won the GTE Pro class in 2022. And in number six car. You know him, you love him, the insane Kevin Estra, who's won this race in 2018 in the GTE Pro category. Andre Lotterer, still in the league, a three-time winner of this race in 2011, 2012, and 2014. And Lawrence Van Tor, who's a podcaster, but he also did win this race in 2018 in the GTE Pro category. Cam, talk about your mans.
Well, I'm going to be real with you, Chief. Last year did not go to plan for those pining for the 20th overall victory. In fact, it was bit shit, as Herbert Amfauer once said about 1997's Porsche Le Mans showing. Vengeance is on the brain at Porsche. The 963 was promising last year, but not as promising as you might think with all of the testing, the fact that they were getting data from customer cars when no one else was. There was speed. There was the flashes of mighty pace, often buried under mechanical issues and just weird bouts of stuff going wrong, occasionally getting fused into the side of a McLaren by an LMP2. Still definitely not mad about Petit Le Mans last year.
No, never. I can't not imagine what... You don't mention it at all whenever there's a sports car race on.
Oral surgeons and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Not so in 2024. Porsche kicked the door off the hinges to start the year in IMSA, won the 24 Hours of Daytona in just the most phenomenal race-long battle with Cadillac, and have pretty much been racking up either podiums or wins ever since on both sides of the prototype coin. They have had a car on the podium every race this year. Sometimes multiple cars on the podium. Some of those are wins. They roll into this race with both championships currently led by them, by the factory teams, with the number six Porsche over in WEC, with the number seven car over in IMSA, and an armada of quality privateers. Jota Sport are legit. Now we're going to have to see what happens with that 12 car. Jota won Spa, and they did not get handed it so much because they still had to hold off the factory car only about 13 seconds back, held them back, even pulled a gap on them.
Was on the podium in Qatar, too.
Yeah, they are a good team. The 38 team, not as mighty the mighty 38 this year, but, I mean, they have Jensen Button, Hansen, and Rasmussen. That is a quality lineup, a very safe set of hands. Jensen's been good around here before. Hansen has won in class here before. And the reliability has been a hell of a lot better this year. They lasted through the 24 hours fine. Occasional sensor issues. Nothing in terms of hardware. Went through Sebring fine. They've been solid in WEC. But that doesn't matter. You proved the car last 24 hours. You've been racking up wins and podiums with reckless abandon all year. You're proving the year two Porsche prototype narrative right. None of that matters if you can't deliver here. Those things were bullets on test day. There was some very quick sectors run by the Porsches. Didn't really get the laps together. In the pantheon of insane bullshit, right alongside Davide Tardozzi is one Kevin Estra, who was on fire through two sectors, only to go flying off the road at Mulsanne Corner.
Yes.
That car will be in Hyperpole, though.
Indeed.
There is a lot to like here.
We'll have to wait and see how this plays out. Again, six bullets in the chamber. Six very, very strong lineups. Arguably the highest floor of any factory that's here. Can they deliver the big one? And can Roger get his first ever Le Mans victory outright overall? Going to be fascinating to see how that turns out.
I also say, the FAT International livery on the Proton car.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Throwing it back to the 90s Yost cars. Phenomenal livery. Phenomenal team I think the 99 could be a legitimate dark horse. They've got two proven quantities here. Ticknell and Yanni both know how to win here. And Julian Andlauer might be the best young prototype driver in the scene today.
Mm. Lots to like about Porsche going in. I can see in the eyes of many why they are favorites for this race. Going to be fascinating to see how that turns out. Cam, talk to me about NMP2. Obviously not in the World Endurance Championship anymore full time, but of course they're back as a one-off for this race. 16 entries in total, some from the European Le Mans series, some in the Pro-Am class as well. Who's the pick of the bunch for you?
If I were to make an LMP2 pick right now, and it's kind of weird because in previous years, we've had previous races to go on with LMP2. With this, it's basically everyone just lumped in from the classes abroad, not in WEC. If I were to pick a car out of Pro-Am, I really like that CrowdStrike number 45. Colin Braun, Nicky Katzberg, and George Kurtz.
Mm.
That's quality. That is high quality team. Colin Braun can wheel. NASCAR Truck Series alum Colin Braun can wheel. And Nicky Katzberg, I mean, everything he's touched the last couple of years, he's been phenomenally quick at.
Indeed. A lot of fun teams to look out to keep an eye on. I'll tell you my pick for NMP2 a little bit later on. But again, keep an eye out for last year's winners into Europol in the 34 car as well. Very, very strong team last year. Very high performing. Keep an eye on them as well. I was going to say
for the pro category, this is a feeling. This is a feeling pick, I would say.
Sure.
If I were to go on vibes.
Factor?
Kind of like that United Autosport car.
I do too. Jarvis
Siegel and Guard.
Nolan Siegel was phenomenal at Daytona. He was the one saving grace out of that otherwise tedious team. LMP2. If there was one thing you could take away from that, it was that Nolan Siegel was very quick. And yeah.
And thankfully, no Ligiers to be found to ruin the reliability record. It is an Orica-only class.
Indeed. No outliers here this time. What about NMGT3? The 23 NMGT3s on Take the Field this year. A whole smorgasbord from a bunch of different series across the world of GT3 and sports car racing, Cam. So, I mean, take your pick. There's a whole fully you could take. I mean, fucking hell. We had Proton on top in qualifying before we got to Hyperpole here in the Ford Mustang. Big Chungus is in the front of the field.
The big mate is reborn as Big Horse.
Big fucking horse. That is a proud stallion.
Who was it into turn one? I want to say it was one of the Lamborghinis. The Mustang is up behind it, and it just scares the Lamborghini off the road.
It's like seeing Garage 56 all over again, only there's more of them, and they've now got Ford Mustang badges on them. It is insane. That thing is enormous.
Makes a hell of a sound like Garage 56 did as well.
Oh, yeah. Like, the only thing missing is them playing Freebird again in the background.
They can. It has to be like Canadian, like twinge Freebird, because the cars are built by Multimatic.
Sure. But that works.
But yeah, the Mustangs have been looking good thus far. The weird thing is there's a lot of Le Mans rookies here as well. Mm. And none of these cars are truly new, but almost all of them are new to Le Mans. I mean, the closest thing, one Porsche 911 is the same as the last 911, which is the same as the last 911. Most of the rest of these cars are pretty much brand new here. Based on previous experience here with one of their drivers, I really like the 91 Porsche. And we know that Manti are them when it comes to 24-hour races. And there's rain projected for this race as well. And the rear engine supremacy will be televised.
Right. this is the part where I'm going to play RJ's predictions that he sent us in on his mobile phone, because he's obviously working this weekend for DSC. So here's RJ's picks on who he thinks will win the 24 Hours of Le Mans before we get into our official overall picks.
Hey guys, hey Dre, hey Cam, and hey listeners, I sincerely apologize that I've not been able to be featured on the show due to scheduling concerns, but I just wanted to contribute my own predictions for the weekend's races. First, I'll start in LMP2 with what I think are my nailed-on picks. Both my heart and my head for LMP2 go with Cool Racing's number 37 of Lorenzo Plusa, Malte Jakobsen, and Rotomo Viata. I think the combination of drivers there is just so, so powerful, and they, to me, stand out as the favorites, even in the top field. For LMP2 Pro-Am, I like CrowdStrike Racing and APR, George Kurtz, Colin Braun, and Nicky Katzberg to go back-to-back. In LMGT3, I'm going to go off the board a bit, and I'll say that Heart of Racing's Aston Martin, number 27, with Ian James, Dano Mancinelli, and Alex Rivers will win the class. And then that just leaves Hypercar. And God, what a deep field we have. My heart would love it if Toyota Gazoo Racing could get the one that got away back and prove that they can win with real competition if they ever need to quash any narratives. My head thinks it'll be Porsche, but I don't think it's going to be any of the wet cars. I think it's going to feel a lot like 2015. The third car, the number 4 of Jaminet, Tandy, and Nasr, is the one that, as of minutes before FP1, is going to win the race. Yeah, that's pretty much all I've got in my regards. Now let's hear y'all's predictions.
Very interesting from Mr. O'Connell. So, Cam, give me your overall winner. Because remember, I predicted this correctly last year. My finest hour as an M101 predictor.
You broke out the revolver, shot completely in the dark, and hit the bullseye.
It was beautiful. Right between the eyes. Number 51.
Right between the eyes.
It was an emotional pick, but it was an emotional pick that worked out beautifully. What do you reckon this year? Give me an overall winner.
I think I'm going to have, and they did not have the great qualifying, so they're starting a little bit down the field, but I'm going to have to roll with RJ on this one. I'm going to go with the IMSA Porsche, the number 4, Tandy, Jaminet, Nasr. They have been so good this year, and there's just some, when you watch the 963 here compared to a year ago, it is so transformed on braking into the corners. Reliability wise, again, it's proved itself at Daytona, but Le Mans is its own equation. I like the 4 car.
Okay, my 3 picks. LMGT3, they've been so unlucky this year. I can't help but not emotionally pick the Iron Dames in the 85.
I would. However, we do not support
AI-built
liveries.
Their marketing livery off the back of AI was complete bullshit, and I'm very disappointed that was how they decided to come up with their livery this year. Like, we do not need AI bullshit interfering with our own human creativity, and I will happily say that on the record. However, the Iron Dames is a great team. Like, they've been so unlucky this year, like, not to have won multiple.
Who did they kill
races
in a past life?
I do
everything
not understand.
That could go wrong. Every round up to this far that could has.
Sarah Bovee at Spa last month was incredible. Holy shit, she beat the field over her knee in terms of outright speed at Spa. She was sensational. I think the Dames have got something here, and I think the luck will dissipate. I think they can genuinely win the LMGT3 class. They've got the speed for it. I think
the only real obstacle for you is that the Lamborghini got a big nerf going into this race.
Yeah, that is a problem. I admit it's a problem. We'll have to wait and see, but I can't not pick the Dames on this one. LMP2 and the Pro-Am category, I'm going to bundle them all together. Again, I'm going for an emotional pick here. Give me the 23 for United Auto Sports, the USA branch. I just love their driver lineup. Philippe Albuquerque, Ben Hanley, and Big Ben Keating. I love that lineup, and I think it's a very strong lineup. We all know Ben Keating is the best bronze in the world when he needs to be. Philippe Albuquerque.
I do think the fight in Pro-Am is the fight between that 23 car and the CrowdStrike. I think those two.
Yeah. I agree. I think CrowdStrike are strong.
Monstrous lineups.
Yeah, I think they could both win it outright, quite frankly. I think they're just two very, very strong teams in there for LMP2. A part of me wants to go back to the 51 for the overall win just because they won it last year. And you know me, I'm a Ferrari man deep down.
They've hurt you so many times, Dre.
They have.
The one time where the narcotic came good, and it was in my house.
Which is why I'm going to take the number 50.
The 50?
I think it'll be the other Ferrari this time around. I think it's going to be the number 50 with Fuoco, Molina, and Nielsen. I think it's their time. I think they're going to come through. I can't not pick a Ferrari. It's to me. I can't not do it.
It is you. I do like the 50. Raw speed, I think the 50 lineup has it. I think over the course of the 24 hours, I like the 51 lineup with the Ferraris because there's so much knowledge and experience in that lineup in the endurance racing side.
Absolutely. I will not blame anybody for picking the 51 to retain the crown. Completely understandable pick. I'm just going with my heart here. I'm going to go for the 50. Fuoco, Molina, and Nielsen. And I
this
think...
is a classical beef. This is like a 50-year-old beef. We haven't had a Porsche v Ferrari beef here in quite a while. Oh,
which is what Toyota's going to end up winning this year, make it 6 out of 7.
Motherfucker!
It's that kind of race. The 24 Hours of Le Mans this weekend. You know where to find it. If you're in the UK, Discovery Plus has the whole race live. And also, if you're in the UK, free-to-air viewers... the whole night portion of the race, I believe it's going to be from 9 p.m. till about 5 in the morning, is going to be free to air on Quest. Do watch along. You can watch it for free on Freeview Televisions in the UK. So you have no excuse. You can watch through the night on free-to-air TV, which is great. More of that, please, in motorsport. Please and thank you. If not, it is also on Discovery Plus if you are that way inclined in the UK.
Check it out. It's the greatest race in the world. You're going to have that on Max. So if you are a Max subscriber, go into that sports section and enjoy the glorious high-definition broadcast. I'm going to watch so much racing next weekend.
It's going to be glorious. Quietest weekend of the year otherwise, unless you're a huge NASCAR fan, apparently. But besides that, you have no excuse. Watch the 24 Hours of Le Mans. If I am, you will too. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. He's been Cam Buckley. We'll see you on the Circuit de la Sarthe. Until next time. Oh, places you can find us before I get out of here real quick. YouTube, Motorsport 101, Motorsport101.com, Patreon.com, Motorsport101. You know where to find us. Check us out on there if you haven't already. At Dre Harrison101, at C Buckley917. Sayonara.
You like sports car racing now, don't you, Dre?
Shut your fucking mouth.
He's just saying that because he knows I'm right.
Shut up.